We're so glad you've tuned in to this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And I know you will be too as soon as you hear who's returned to the studio today. I'm Ryan Dobson here with Lou Ann Crane, and our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And right at the top, I'd like to let parents know that some of the topics we're going to be dealing with today are not for little ears.
And yet, Ryan, this conversation will be so helpful for moms and dads looking for answers to some of their biggest questions about raising kids. And I got to tell you, I am always excited to sit at the feet of this amazing woman that we have here today and soak up her knowledge. Doctor, of course, we appreciate her for her medical and professional expertise. But on top of all of that is her mother's heart and her passion for serving the Lord.
Well, that sums it up rather well, Lou Ann. Dr. Meg Meeker is back with us today, and I'm excited that she is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing how you and I have drawn our conclusions about families and about children and about life. In fact, about the Christian worldview. And it shows up in your books and my books. Mm-hmm. Dr. Meeker is a board-certified pediatrician and MD who has practiced pediatric and adolescent medicine for over 20 years now. And she works alongside her husband, Dr. Walt Meeker, who is also a pediatrician. You enjoy private practice together with your husband. That must be fun.
You know, it is fun. Walt and I started our practice 22 or 3 years ago. But, you know, many times parents will ask or people will ask me, how in the world do you work with your husband? Isn't that hard? And I said, you know, working with him really is a delight and it's fun. What has been hard is raising children with him because I want him to do things my way when it comes to our kids. If he wants to treat a patient differently, I don't mind. That's okay. Mm. So, you know, it really has been fun to work together all these
women
years.
Women have a way of thinking
yes.
like that.
Yeah, we do.
Especially when it comes to children.
That's right.
And now, the last time you were here, we did some programs that I thought were outstanding, if I can compliment ourselves in that way. And you carried about 90% of it because we were talking about ADHD, hyperactive disorder. And I thought it was outstanding. And from that, we have asked our listeners what they would like us to talk about because we want to hit the target. We want to know who's out there and what they're waiting for us to deal with. Just today, I got a survey that told us that. And here they are. Here are the top 7 things people are asking us to deal with. You being a pediatrician, me being a child developmentalist, we can have some fun with this and
great.
Help people too. All right, here they are. Number 1, questions about potty training. Does that surprise you?
That doesn't surprise me. That's a very stressful
experience. Yeah. Number 2, misbehavior issues, disciplining kids, and strong-willed child issues. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about that.
I do as well.
And number 3, little kids and masturbation issues, even if the little kids don't really realize what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I bet I've been asked that 1,000 times through the years, and you have
to. I have to.
And we will deal with it. Number 4, smartphone and social media issues, how to curb use of, how much is too much, the dangers of, and so on.
Yeah.
That's another very important one. I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about that. And number 5 refers to children with ADHD and ODD, which means opposition defiance disorder.
Someone call that mean kid disorder.
I've heard that. Now, we just dealt with the hyperactive issue, but we can come back to things associated with it. Number 6, adopted children and the behavior issues that they often have. Acting out, not being able to trust, et cetera. All kids do that. Mm-hmm. And number 7, grandparents raising grandchildren, which often doesn't seem to go really smoothly, at least with the people who write in.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important one because more and more older people are now picking up the responsibility for children with parents divorcing and going back to school and all those kind of things. Now, that those are some topics that I would like to discuss with you, not today, but in the future. For today, at least, is a place to start. I want to read a specific question that came just today. And this is what a woman wrote. I need some suggestions on how to help my 3-year-old potty train. He is very good at going number one on the potty and rarely has an accident. But when it comes to number two, he usually goes in his pants. I can't figure out a good reinforcer to encourage him to go to the potty. I've tried treats like candy or cookies. I've tried small toys, bouncy balls, and so on. And I recently tried doing a chart system where he put a sticker on every time he goes. And when he reaches 3 stickers, he gets a larger toy. Nothing has worked. Mm-hmm. He hides or just outright goes in his pants in front of me. It's so frustrating because he is so capable. I tell him over and over that he's a big boy and he can do it, but nothing is working. Help. You could have quoted that.
Can you feel her frustration?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this mom. You know, well, a couple of things come to mind. I think that, potty training is a very stressful experience for most parents. And I will say that it usually takes boys longer than it does with girls. First of all, it can be a control issue, so you have to be very careful, moms out there. And you don't want to get into control battles with your kids over. And the big areas where kids will challenge you with control is in eating and in pooping. And, that's where they go because they can completely control that, particularly a little boy like this who can control it. And he could be having a little bit of fun with his mother and sort of showing her who's boss. I don't know. I don't know what his motives are. So I think it's very important not to engage in a control battle with your kids because when you enter that territory and you've kind of declared war, who's going to win here? Moms have to win, so I wouldn't declare war over that.
Especially because the child holds all the cards.
Exactly.
In that situation.
And you just don't want to declare war where you know you can't win, so you don't go there. The second thing that I wanted to say is my experience is, in general, bowel issues are very emotional and stressful for mothers. Some of the most stressed mothers I see are kids who have chronic diarrhea, who aren't eating well, who aren't gaining weight, who aren't pooping well, kids who have constipation. And for some reason, this really stresses us. I think we feel that at least as moms, we should be able to help our kids grow. They should be able to poop well. We should eat well. So it's a very emotionally charged issue for moms. But I do want to say, I think that in a situation like this, the little boy, yes, he can control his bowels. However, when kids are learning to poop, it can be frightening for them to go on the toilet because it feels like a much bigger event physically than urinating in the toilet. So that's why it can be a little more frightening for kids. The second issue is that kids get a bit embarrassed. And
she said he crawls under the table.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's very common. Often kids in potty training will have their regular underwear on. They will actually know where the pull-ups are. And when they feel they're going to have a bowel movement, they'll run and get a pull-up, put the pull-up on, hide underneath a chair or a table, have the bowel movement, and then go change their pants. And it's a very odd phenomenon, but it's very much like issues school-age children have with not wanting to have a bowel movement at school. It's very common. It's a reason a lot of older kids get constipated because they don't want to have a poop at school. And Ryan's looking at me like, uh-oh, what am I in for?
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking of a 60-year-old man who's driving a truck down the freeway right now saying, what am I doing? Listen to all this about pooping.
I know. But, it's a big part of life.
Yeah.
And for mothers, it's a big issue. Constipation and potty training are two of the most common issues I deal with. So to finish out with this mom, here's what I would do. I would back off on the stickers and treats and rewards, and I would give him more time. I would put him on the toilet after breakfast every morning because we know that eating stimulates pooping. So I would put him on the potty after breakfast, give him a little bit of time. If he goes, terrific. If he doesn't, leave him alone and try the next day and the next day. Put him on the toilet a couple times a day. But don't stand there and watch him. Give him some privacy because he may feel very shy about it, modest, and just keep encouraging him. But I think that giving it too much attention can really be a detriment.
Creates anxiety.
Creates a lot of anxiety. And that little boy thinks, gee, this is a really big deal to my mom, so I better get this right. I'd back off and just give him a little bit more time. He won't go to kindergarten pooping in his pants.
Yeah.
Well, talk about his age. He's 3 years old.
He's 3 years
old. Does that bother you?
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. No, because 3 and a half actually is pretty average for kids, for boys beginning potty training. And most parents don't realize that because they have a grandmother, a great-grandmother insisting that they, the parent, was potty trained when she was 9 months old.
Yeah, sure.
Physiologically impossible. But so mom is sitting here thinking, I need to get him potty trained because I want to be a really good mom and I want to get this right. Sometimes the most prudent thing we can do is just to back off and give our kids a little more time and space to let
it'll
nature
happen.
It'll happen.
Yeah. And I'm looking at this age, too. We talk about a 3-year-old. I know I have several friends that often by that point, you're perhaps pregnant with your next one.
Yes.
And I know a lot of women who say, I am totally going to get this one potty trained before the next one is born. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we put that timeline on them for our own convenience.
Right. We really can't. It's really not fair to the child because sometimes they can control their bowels and they can control urination. But a lot of times they can't. And so it's really important to let their physiology catch up with your wishes as a mom. And but that's really important because that can backfire later on in life if a child feels very anxious about using the bathroom.
Well, let's talk about the strong-willed child.
Oh, great.
People have heard my views. Yes. Give us yours.
You going to cite Ryan again on this one, Doctor?
No, I'm not the strong-willed
child. No, you're not.
That
let's clear
me.
That up right
no.
now.
Yeah.
Danae was the strong-willed child.
I'm the strong-willed adult.
Not.
She's not.
Adult.
Isn't that funny?
It really is.
Yeah.
She is so delightful. She was at our house. She came out from California last week, and she just waited on her mom and me the whole time. Went to the store, brought stuff back, cooked for us, cleaned up.
Oh.
I mean, this is the kid that I couldn't get into a kitchen when she was 12 years old.
There's hope.
So
there is hope.
It is interesting how, and this is why the major theme of my book, Strong-Willed Child, is hang on. It's going to get better. And you'll be good friends, maybe best friends with that child later.
Well, I have a confession. I hung on to that book, The Strong-Willed Child Next to the Bible, and that got me through my first daughter's years. Because as I mentioned in a previous show, my oldest daughter's very, very strong-willed. And I think, I often joke, she was born with her right hand on her right hip and her left finger pointing at me. Her come here, mom, challenge me. And I knew that in those first 10 years of her life that one of us was going to go down, and it wasn't going to be me. So, strong-willed meets strong-willed. Interestingly enough, I had the same experience. When she hit 11 or 12, she broke. She just said, okay, you can have it your way, mom. I'm going to go on with the rest of my life. And her teen years were delightful. They're absolutely delightful. And she's 29 now, and she is just a delight. She's the most easygoing, stable kid you can imagine of all my four. She's just always in the same mood and very happy and just sort of rolls with life. So you're absolutely right. But one of the things that I appreciated that you taught me in The Strong-Willed Child is the difference between breaking the will and breaking the spirit. And I often quote that to my parents because I get a lot of questions about strong-willed kids. You know, I worry about young parents now, though, because I think that they are very timid to respond to their instincts. When their instincts say, no, you can't do that, kid, I'm going to make sure you don't do that again, they don't act on that. Rather, they sit back and think, well, I don't want a confrontation. I don't want them to get upset. I don't want negativity in the home, so I'm just going to kind of let it ride. And when that happens, in time, they become overwhelmed with battles with their kids because a strong-willed child is going to challenge you until you're ready to really take them on. So it's not a matter of when are you going to battle with your strong-willed child. It's just a matter of how are you going to get through it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I encourage parents is, first of all, I say, I love strong-willed kids. I love to see a strong-willed. I love to have a child in my practice when I'm examining, fight me. Because they're saying, get away from me. Get that thing out of my ears.
Uh-huh.
You don't belong there. And I don't belong there. So I encourage parents to let their kids really express their determined spirit. However, it really is important for children to feel safe in their home, emotionally, physically, and always, to know that you're in charge. And strong-willed children need more than any other kids to know that mom or dad is in charge. So it's painful showing your kids that you're in charge, but it's a must. You have to do it. Now, what I encourage parents to do with kids who feel like they're out of control, strong-willed kids, is say, I want you to pick two behaviors that this child is exhibiting, and I want you to go to war on those two behaviors for the next 3 weeks or month. And everything else we're going to forget about. Because what happens, the trap parents fall into with strong-willed kids, is their whole day turns into no, 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 no.
One long battle.
It's one long battle, and nobody wins. So be very intentional, be very deliberate. Pick two behaviors that are completely unacceptable to you. And work on those and tell the child you're going to work on them. You sit down with him. He's 4 years old. I don't like it when you hit your sister. That's not acceptable in our home. And this is what's going to happen if you do that again. And then when you put your foot over the line, you've entered into battle. There's no backing out. What you will succeed at over the next month is winning that battle. And so I tell parents, don't go there unless you're really ready to have it out. And then once you break that, then you go and you break another. But that's very, very important for parents to do. And I feel that many parents today are afraid of establishing their authority because they confuse that with being oppressive and dominant and
that's
crushing.
That's what they're taught today.
Yeah, and crushing the spirit. But you don't crush the spirit, but you got to break that will.
You talk about crushing the spirit. One of the films in the new film series we're doing, it's actually from 1978, but it's being released next year, is Shaping the Will Without Breaking the Spirit.
Yes.
And what we want to tell parents is you can shape your kids without breaking them.
Yes.
Without crushing that little spirit. Kids, Lincoln is six, and he's got more energy than he or I know what to do with. And he does little kid things. They're not naughty, but they're little kid things. They're irritating. They're annoying. Stuff spills. Stuff breaks. Stuff gets drawn on because he's excited about things. Those aren't bad. They're just annoying. And they are. I don't want to tell parents that that's not annoying when those things happen. But I can't get mad at him for it.
Mm-mm.
I can't punish him for spilling juice. He didn't mean to do it. He's just got more energy than he can handle. Mm-hmm. But when he's angry, if he's mad and he pushes something off the table, if he's mad and he throws something on the ground, that's that willful defiance. You can change that.
You can change that.
Yeah. That goes to the core of respect and accepting the leadership of the parent. That's different than childish misbehavior.
And respect is a big issue. It's one parents ought to fight for.
Yes.
That's one of the two, or it would be for me.
It's absolutely critical because when a child learns to respect a parent, they learn to respect themselves eventually. Because if you don't respect your parent and your parent is trying to teach you something, and but you don't look up to that parent, you're not going to listen to what they say. You're not going to emulate them. How are you going to learn if you don't have respect for your teacher? So once you establish that respect and a child has it, they listen, and then they learn how to respect themselves. And that's so important to solid, healthy identity formation. The other thing that's very important in discipline, and particularly with strong-willed kids, is learning self-control. Now, a 3, 4, 5-year-old doesn't have good self-control. So we have to impose control. And once they learn how to live within control that's imposed on them, only then, when they're older, can they learn to assume that control and make it part of them and then exercise self-control. So really, we're doing a huge disservice to kids in not imposing control, because they can never learn self-control if we don't first impose it on them.
You know, these things that you're talking about here and that we have discussed so far are what I would call the fundamentals of parenting. You get a few things down pat, and these are the ones to really understand. You can have a pleasant relationship with a child, even if he's got a strong will.
You really can. And I think that we have a generation of parents who are wonderful. They are reading. They are interested. They're absorbing information. They so much want to do it well that they put too much pressure on themselves. And I think that they make the scope of their work so broad that they jump right over the basics. And I always tell moms, and I tell the same things to dad, being a great parent is about getting a few of the big things right and letting the rest go. And that's one of the big things. Get your discipline and your respect right, and you can really enjoy your kids for so many years. And that's really what kids want. They want that so much more than a bigger house or another car or two soccer teams, not just one. Or so sometimes we miss the essentials because we're looking to all the other expanded particulars that we feel we need to do to make life great for our kids.
Dr. Meeker, just to cap this off, make it very practical then for someone listening. You cited a child who's hitting his sister. That would be, I think, a behavior we all agree we would want to put a cap on. So you said you would draw the line and say, if you cross it, this is what will happen. What do you suggest would happen? What are some of the consequences that a parent could impose that might be options?
Well, I like timeouts. Timeouts are hard. They're hard for parents. It's hard as a parent to discipline a child because that means you have to be there to do it. It takes time, and it's not pleasant, but it's so worth it. I would tell a child who's hitting, if you do it again, you're going to go to your room, and you're going to stay in your room until you're ready to come down and behave like we all behave in our home. Now, say that child runs up to her room, and a couple minutes later, she runs right back down, and she goes to play, and say, wait a minute, you're not done, you're not ready. That means you walk the child back up to the room, and you take them up as many times as you need to break them to say, okay, I'm sorry, I'm going to behave now. So it may take an hour, and I will tell you, with strong-willed kids, they will press you. They may make a battle last for hours. But you have to be willing to do that, because once you've declared war, you must stay in the war until you win. Must do that.
And they understand better than parents think they do that there is a contest going on.
Oh, yes, they do.
They get it. They know somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose, and they're determined not to lose.
And they know they're younger and they have more energy. So they know they want to wear us down.
And you're distracted and you're doing things. You're getting ready for a dinner or whatever it is, and they work full time at it.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's very, very hard, but I promise every parent the payoff comes later. It does come, because then you can really have a great relationship with your kids. And as I tell parents, if you can't get your child to obey the family rules when they're 5 and 6, you're going to have real trouble when you have a 16-year-old on your hands with a set of car keys in his hand saying, no, I'm not going to do what you say, Mom. That's a very dangerous situation to him and to everybody else.
Well, we've been talking to Dr. Meg Meeker, a pediatrician in private practice, and our guest today. In fact, we've come right up to the precipice, and we've got to end this program very quickly. But we must talk about it more. So if you will be with us, we will continue talking and let our listeners hear what we're about to record.
I would love to. Thanks so much.
Good. Thank you.
And, Doctor, we trust all of our listeners will make plans to join us for that as well next time.
In the meantime, make sure to stop by drjamesdobson.org to find more great resources for parents, like Dr. Meeker's books and our Solid Answers section of our website, which is packed with articles written by my dad and our host, Dr. James Dobson.
And you may have heard earlier about the survey we did to learn more about what our listeners want us to talk about here at Family Talk. I will ask, is there a question you have about family issues or a topic you'd like to hear covered on Family Talk? If so, let us know about it.
Yes, and you can email us that at drjamesdobson.org, message us through Facebook, or give us a call, 877-732-6825.
And when you do call, ask about how you can become a monthly supporter of Family Talk so we can work together in helping families. Again, that phone number, 877-732-6825, or of course you can give online at drjamesdobson.org.
Thanks for listening today, and be sure to tell your friends to join us next time for more parenting advice with Dr. Meg Meeker and Dr. James Dobson on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We'll see you then.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.